suburban schools have been so anti-vouchers.
Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Shelby County Mayor Lee Harris on the budget, spending, and more tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes, president and executive editor of the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by Shelby County Mayor Lee Harris. Thanks for being here again.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. You have submitted a budget, your first budget as county mayor. You've been through budget processes before, obviously up at the legislature and back when you're on city council. We'll walk through the budget until we get tired of talking about the budget and, sure. and other things you've got going on. But let's start with one of the things that was striking, at least in this initial operating budget proposal, was there was no additional funding for MATA, something you talked about, I think, on the campaign trail. MATA supporters had been very excited about the prospect that the county would do funding over and above what it's received in the past. Where does that stand, funding, additional funding for MATA?
Sure. So I was surprised by the surprise because I think I've been pretty consistent and transparent in my tenure in office. And we've always said that we'll present a plan with respect to how the county can thoughtfully invest in MATA in September. There are at least two or three things that need to be done first. One is you've got to make sure that whatever investment the county makes, because that would be a historic moment, a new initiative that the county would take on, whatever investment we make, we have to make sure that the investment is used for to increase ridership and frequency of service. A lot of times you invest in some of these public organizations and the investment actually disappears into the ether. And so you've got to have some sort of parameters in place to make sure that the investment goes to the purpose expected. At the same time, the county and the folks I represent have an expectation that they'll be at the table. MATA has a board of directors, and not that the county wants to control the board of directors, not at all, but I think county representation on the board of directors is something that needs to be discussed, and so we've got to have some time to try to work out that. As far as I know, there's no answer to that quite yet, but I think we could get there. The other piece of the puzzle is this is a new initiative which requires community engagement. That means that you've got to have at least a couple of town halls, one in the suburban community to talk about the issue and one in the urban core to talk about the issue. I mean, that's how you approach new initiatives. And so we need time to do that. And that was always the plan. And so in September, I will present a plan to the county commission around how to invest in MATA, but also how to make sure that the investment is tied to increases in ridership, make sure that we have a seat at the table, and make sure that the community gets a chance to engage over a very important issue.
So budget-wise, that would mean next year's budget. If things came together, if all those questions were answered appropriately or to your liking, your and others' liking, it would be a next year issue.
As I said, in the state of the county, it would mean a phase-in approach. It would be the same approach we took with respect to pre-K. Pre-K is a top shared community concern. And for the first time this year, the city of Memphis, for example, is expected to really participate in a heavy way in pre-K. They phased in, so there's been talks going on that predated my administration. And now, during the coming budget year, we'll be at that first year where we'll actually see investment, substantial investment from city, county, and the school system in favor of pre-K. So that's the approach that I talked about in the state of the county, that we'd have a phased in approach to MATA, and that's the expectation that I'll talk about in September.
So before we go to Bill, or as we go to Bill, the pre-K funding, how in your operating budget, what's in there and how does it work in terms of the county funding pre-K along with the city?
So my campaign website is still up, and this is the thing I talked about on the campaign trail most often. My campaign website represents that the two things that were most important were education, particularly pre-K, and pulling people out of poverty. With respect to pre-K, what we've done in this budget cycle is make one of the largest investments the county or local government has ever made in favor of pre-K. So we have about $6 million in favor of pre-K in this budget. $5.5 million goes to traditional pre-K programming. The other $500,000 is an investment in Porter Leith, which runs early Head Start programming. So that's the 0 to 3 year old population. That $500,000 will be paired with about $4.5 million more dollars from philanthropic sources and a federal investment. And so we're able to really leverage the county investments there. And also, of course, the $5.5 million will be paired with investment from the city of Memphis and an expected investment from Shelby County Schools.
Bill.
Mayor, you had another surprise that you noted in the budget address, and it's helpful to point out, I think, that the fiscal year that this budget would take effect that we're talking about begins July 1st. You're operating now on the budget, in effect, of your predecessor and of the county commission before the elections last year. But the projections for revenue were off a bit, more than a bit,
sure.
Would you say?
Oh, no doubt about it. So we're currently in the FY19 budget year, and I've proposed the budget for FY20. Without getting into the weeds, the FY19 is at a deficit. And so the deficit is to the tune of millions of dollars. That deficit will extend until FY20 and into the years beyond. And so this budget year, we're going to have to try to address those deficits from previous budget years. And so that is tough. That is very tough. But we're going to do it. The most important part of the puzzle is the deficit in the education fund. We just didn't collect enough in property tax revenues to meet what was pledged to the schools. We're going to make sure that the schools get every dollar, every dime that was pledged to them by the previous county commission and the previous administration. Even though property tax collections were off, estimates were off, and we the education fund is short. We're going to do the same thing with FY20 because the FY19 promises extend into the future because of maintenance of effort requirements. So whatever was promised with FY19 continues to be our obligation well into the future, and we're going to make sure that we live up to those obligations and that our schools get every single dime that has been pledged to them. So, yeah, we started a very tricky place, a very tough place, with estimates that were a little too rosy, and we started a place where, you know, the past budget cycles, there was really, really excessive spending, no doubt about it. I mean, the CIP last year was over $170 million for a fund policy. CIP is our construction budget. Mm-hmm. Our construction project budget was over $170 million last year. And so we've got to come in line with what's a reasonable CIP investment range, which is $75 million. So the CIP budget, was extreme last year and the year before that. We've got to come back into reasonable spending levels. We've got to make sure that our debt is at a reasonable range, make sure our credit rating is high, make sure that our OPEB and pension obligations are paid for. We've got some real challenging headwinds, looking forward, but I think we can take care of it. But yeah, we don't start with a surplus,
that
right?
Deficit. Right. Go back to we don't start to with a surplus. The school shortfall was $4 million?
Education fund is $4 million off for FY19.
Okay. Yeah, and other operating was off as well?
Yeah.
A deficit separate from school spending?
So property tax collection is our major source of revenue. And so it's our major source of revenue for everything the county government does, including fund the schools. So the amount of property tax revenue allocated to the schools was about $4 million off. But property tax, if it's off, it's off for every single fund, okay, including the general fund.
You think it's another $4 or $5 million across the board?
It's another three or four at least, okay, that's associated with the general fund. Okay. And it is at least $4 million, okay, associated with the education fund, because the source is a property tax. That's what's off, and that supports all our funds.
All right, back to Bill.
So do you use the reserve? Do you cut things? Do you, as you mentioned, bring CIP down to around $75 million? Or is it a combination of those?
So we're getting into the weeds. The short of it is we've got some challenges in property tax collections, but we also have some opportunities overall in our budget. And so I think we'll be able to make it work. So when I say overall, property tax is not our only source of revenue. We also obviously get sales tax revenue, and there are other sources of revenue. And so maybe we'll be able to make up some of these shortfalls with sales taxes and so forth, and moving some things around. But the point is we are unlikely to be able to go on a spending spree this budget cycle. I mean, I have to defer to the county commission. I present the budget, put it in the hands of county commission, and they decide from there. But it would be hard to go on a spending spree this budget cycle. And so we're going to have to, in my view, really have to laser focus on our priorities. And my perspective as our priority has to be early childhood education, which leads to high literacy rates, early social skills, ultimately to higher levels of high school graduation and employability. That's my perspective. Focus on, we gave a raise to all our employees, so make sure that that we are able to at least partially offset the cost of living increases that our employees face, and making sure that the citizens don't suffer by us raising taxes for no obvious reason, right? For no obvious reason, right? And so, so we delivered a budget that has no tax increase, that has a raise for every employee, and that makes significant investments in early childhood education, that also cures the shortfalls that the schools face because property taxes collections were off, and does a whole host of other things from, you know, investments in startup technology firms, to strategic investments in our criminal justice reform focus.
A couple of those, but stay for a second with schools, which is a huge chunk. What is it? 400 and something million. I mean, it's a huge part of the budget. Sure. The county budget is going to schools, obviously. Yeah. That pre-K fund, who will run? You talked about Porter Leaf doing the 0-3. Who will do the pre-K programming? Is that going to be done through Shelby County Schools or another? I mean, how is that all going to be managed? And how is that effort going to be held accountable? Because it's a huge increase in spending.
Sure.
Will it work the way you want it to work? And I've never had anybody at the table who didn't want pre-K to work, but how do you hold people accountable?
So you're right. So Shelby County government is not currently involved in schools, right? We have a director of education and we're building out our expertise with respect to schools, but we don't ordinarily operate in that space. So if we have a schools or education related program, we are going to rely on the expertise of a vendor. And in this case, we've hired a third party intermediary, Seeding Successes is who we expect to hire to administer this new education program. And so they will be tasked with identifying where classrooms will open, where classrooms can be preserved, and assessing whether or not the program has been successful. We think that when it's all said and done, most of those classrooms will be classrooms that Shelby County Schools opens or preserves, but Seeding Success will be our representative through that process. Because again, it's something that the Shelby County government doesn't do. And so in the first year of a major program, you should bring in an expert to kind of help run and administer. And that is what we have done. And the commission has voted that is the right approach.
You also, as you mentioned before, you talked about technology and the role it's playing. So talk a little bit about the fund that you've been able to carve out of this difficult budget year and what that start means for the future of what jobs are here in one of our biggest industries, logistics, and what that means for our economic development strategy.
So we have an investment in a startup technology fund in the budget proposal, and we'll see where county commissioners land on that investment. It's an investment to the tune of about $1.25 million. It is a fund that others are starting, and Shelby County government, if this is approved, would just participate in that fund. But it is a fund to grow startup tech companies here in Memphis and Shelby County. That's critically important, like you mentioned, because we are a logistics and distribution hub, and there is no area of industry that is subject to more disruption because of technology and change and innovation than distribution and logistics, right? Think of Uber, right? Think of the robotics that Federal Express has just rolled out for package delivery. Think about Amazon, which is a tech company, that now is building out a fleet of drivers and package delivery, delivery operation. Think of autonomous vehicles and autonomous trucks. It is critical that our community have an approach to this impending change. A lot of the highest paying jobs in our community right now are truck driving jobs. And those opportunities to drive a truck, you know, in the next 50 years, right? I don't want to be dramatic, but it is quite clear that over the next 50 years, most of those jobs will be gone. There are a lot of people that tell you it'll happen a lot sooner than that, but we know over the next 50 years, most of those truck driving jobs will be gone. Given that, we need to start really thinking about what are the jobs of the future, how does that economy look? And what I told county commissioners in my address was, well, what we're gonna really need is land drone pilots, people that drive the truck remotely to get it onto the dedicated lane and into the interstate, right? That will be a real job. That will be something that's played out over and over again, that you have these land drone pilots. And so we got to prepare for that. Part of that is growing a tech community, growing it right here, really teeing up some of the things that are happening at FedEx, which is our most important employer, and some of the things we know that are happening around the country.
So does this all lead to a broader discussion about whether we should remain a logistics center. I suppose we are because of our location, but as you well know, we've had this whole economic development discussion about redoing our strategy, and there have been some questions about whether we should continue to focus this much on logistics.
Well, I think we should continue to focus on logistics. Like I mean, we're at the heart of America, so our location, our access to rails and roads and runways is really critical. So I think we should remain a logistics hub, and I think we should continue to invest in that and make sure that we are on the frontier of innovation in that industry. But we do need to have a broader discussion of economic development. We haven't had that. I mean, I think people just hear the words jobs and they jump up and down, right? And we need to have a more serious discussion than that around economic development, more generally speaking. And that probably has not happened in this community, and certainly that needs to happen. But again, I do think we are a logistics and distribution hub. I do think we have some comparative advantage there, and I do think we should make further investments in logistics and distribution. But the general idea of economic development, or whether we should be chasing manufacturing jobs, or whether we should, you know, be so, you know,
whether we should
be so excited about all these things that are going to fade away, right, because of automation and so forth with respect to manufacturing, for example. That's a broader discussion we should have, and we have not had it.
You mentioned this briefly, but let's go deeper into the Office of Reentry and funding for the public defenders. Let's start with reentry. That's people, ex-offenders, who trying to get them into back into the workplace, right? And that's, what does that involve? Expungements and assistance? What sort of investments are you talking about there?
So we know that people that are in prison now will return to our community. And so what we do in order to really promote public safety is a bunch of things. And nothing is more important than the idea that you've got to create more meaningful opportunity for people returning to your community to succeed. That's the reentry process. So we have an Office of Reentry, and we're seeking to expand that Office of Reentry. So we'll pick up a few employees, a handful of new employees, and then the Office of Reentry. We'll expand the campus both south and north. That campus right now sits in South Memphis. We need to grow that campus a little bit more. We'll add some vocational classroom opportunities at that campus. So the idea is that not only can we already offer soft skills training, which we already offer classrooms and instruction around that, and we also offer, you know, casework experience and so forth. But that, in addition to that, we'll also be able to deliver hard skills training. So we're in the process of building out a classroom on that campus where we will offer vocational skills training opportunity. So we got to do a whole lot more of that. We got to continue to grow that. At the same time, we need to move to more permanent expungement services and driver's license reinstatement services. Right now, a lot of it is real ad hoc. You know, you see an expungement fair over here and an expungement fair over there.
Talk about go back to your legal roots. What is an expungement?
Expungement is an effort to try to clear the record of somebody with a criminal history. The goal is to make sure they're in a better position to get a job if their record is expunged. That's really important. There are a lot of things important to getting a job. Another one is having a driver's license. We believe that between 100 to 150,000 people that live in Shelby County don't have a driver's license because of some court debt that they have not paid off. And so that's a huge part of our population. And so we've got to go through the process of trying to get those people their license back, because the court debt exists, they don't have a license, they're vulnerable to more negative interactions with law enforcement. So there's a lot of services like that, expungement services, services to deliver reinstatement of licenses that we'd love to see on a more permanent basis. We're taking an incremental approach, right, a careful approach. So the first step we're going to do is to hire an attorney devoted solely, if it's approved by the county commission, hire an attorney devoted solely to expungement services. Just that is what this attorney will do. And we hope to build on that and eventually open up an office of expungement, obviously. I mean, we're talking long range thinking, but open up more resources devoted to expungement and reinstatement of driver's licenses.
To people who hear that, you know, to clean up someone's record, is that, I mean, I think some people might hear that as, wait, you're going to hide the fact that this person committed some sort of horrible crime. And is that what expungement is about, or is it some other philosophy there?
You got to do a whole lot of things on a whole lot of fronts if you're going to get these folks employed and meaningfully reintegrated back into society. Expungement is only one piece of the puzzle. There are other pieces of the puzzle, like the reinstatement of driver's licenses. Because like you say, it doesn't necessarily cure everything, for one thing, because the employer could simply ask and then you may be on the spot. For another thing, records never really disappear. The person who had to make the records disappear still exists, right? The newspapers, like the busted magazines, still exist. Google if you Google a person's name, Google doesn't eliminate some of their pages just because an expungement has taken place. So there is no cure-all, and that is not a cure-all, but it is just one step in the process to put a person in a position to apply for a job and maybe get a follow-up interview. But we've also got to make sure they have a driver's license. We've got to make sure that they have opportunity to get vocational skills training. There's a lot of work to be done.
About how many, then I'll go to Bill, about how many people with this office do you serve now and are you trying to serve?
Well, the Office of Reentry probably has a couple handful of people, probably 10 people.
No, I mean, how many people come through?
Thousands. I mean, thousands. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, there's this issue of people with a criminal history and the fact that they need help affects thousands and thousands of people in our community. So the issue of criminal justice reform is a top priority and one of the most important issues in our community. I know people think, oh, it doesn't affect me. It affects thousands and thousands of individuals in our community. We've got to do something about it. And moreover, the costs of it are astronomical. I mean, we spent over $100 million just to house people waiting for a trial at the Bailey Justice Center. Those are people not convicted of anything that are just too poor to pay bail and don't know anybody who will come vouch for them to get them out. And so we just pay to keep them.
Yeah.
So Mayor, you talked about expungement fairs and efforts that generally look at, okay, this is the process that's on the books to do this. And so let's just follow this process, make more people aware of it. Since you've been mayor, what has been your experience with the reaction of other leaders in the criminal justice system, some of whom are elected just like you, when you start going further and start talking about actually changing things, particularly on the front end, with how people wind up in court and in jail in the first place? Is there still resistance to making changes in the essence of our criminal justice system?
It's the toughest work that we do. I don't know if I would say it's resistance, a lot of resistance. I think people just want to know and understand how this helps to improve it, our community moving forward. I think most of us are at the table and most of us operate in collaboration. There are all kinds of groups working on this, and everybody you can think of as a player in criminal justice has a seat at that table and is working proactively to try to get some of these criminal justice reforms to have real meaning at this point. I think we kind of all agree. I mean, the best case example of that is even on the driver's license thing. You know, Amy Weirich recently announced that she was going to stop prosecuting many of the driver's license cases. And that's one of the top volume of cases we see at the Bailey Justice Center is related to driver's licenses and being caught without a driver's license. So we immediately saw volume at the Bailey Justice Center go down with that announcement. So you have, you know, her leadership, you know, you've got the juvenile court judge. I mean, all these folks are at the table, all the clerks, the sheriff and the Memphis Police Department, City of Memphis. I can think of just so many different kinds of groups where we are all at the table working toward the same goal, and I think everybody's working pretty hard. So I don't think there's much resistance. I think sometimes people have a different perspective, but I don't think there's much resistance. But it is hard work because there's a lot of decision makers.
Let me go back to the relationship with the city for just a second and the point you made about MATA. Currently, if the county gives money to the Memphis Area Transit Authority, is MATA in any way obligated to use that money the way that you want it, or does the city control how that money is used?
So our goal is to have some sort of funding agreement between the county, the city, and MATA. We will see where that comes out. But if we have a funding agreement, and this is something that is done in other places, then we can have some sort of a memorialization of how that money is to be spent. I think the good news is this, and we'll see if we get a funding agreement or not, but here's the really good news, is MATA already has a transit vision plan. And that transit vision plan is in line with my thinking around how transit investment should be used. So to the extent the county commissioners and everyone else at the table agree that funding the transit vision plan is a good one, we're in a pretty good place to then kind of turn that into a funding agreement or some other kind of way we can reduce our understanding to a writing.
And that plan basically is a concept of one-way trips no longer than 1 hour, less if possible.
So that was a big, we're going to lie, the big debate in this is probably frequency versus coverage. And so the frequency is you want people, like you say, to be able to take a bus easily and, you know, reduce the wait times and those kind of things. The coverage is you just want to play politics and you just want to cover a huge, massive area and make everybody feel like they've got a bus stop all over the community, right? So that's the coverage issue. And those two things are more or less in conflict. If you do frequency, you probably can't do coverage. So I believe we should do frequency, and that's what the plan mostly says. But coverage is something other people will believe, right? Some people, if you live in some of our far-flung areas, and that includes Whitehaven on the south, or Fraser, Raleigh on the north, or Germantown on the east, or Carrieville on the east, you may say, I don't care about this frequency. Let's invest in a route from Carrieville to downtown. Mm-hmm. Forget the frequency stuff. Let's invest in a route from Fraser to Federal Express. These are all legitimate arguments. But that's where the debate will be played out. But I'm kind of on the side of frequency. But again, it'll come out because you've got to have the community engagement. You'll get the feedback. And that's how this thing comes out. But if you kind of rush through it, the money can be misspent in a second. It happens all the time.
With just a minute left here, we'll rush through. Joris Ray looks like, I think, is now the new superintendent. The Shelby County Schools decided not to go through a national search. Should they, I mean, you are a big, the county is a big funder of the school. Should they have gone through the process of a national search?
Yeah, I don't care about that kind of stuff. All I care about are issues, and we've got a lot of issues in our school system and in our county that we need to resolve. So the issue that we're working on right now is the cafeteria workers. We've got about 680 cafeteria workers that make between $11.50 and $14.50 an hour. They need to make $15 an hour. It's my belief that you cannot work in a job as a public employee and still be in poverty. And some of those folks are still in poverty, so we need to lift their wages. So I don't care if it's Joris Ray or whomever it is, I like them fine, but that's not what I'm in office for. Right? I'm in office for to get some things done on behalf of the public interest. And we have workers making less than $15 an hour. That's what I'd like to see. I think there's room to form a partnership with whoever the superintendent is and the school board around that issue and issues like that.
All right. Thank you. We have more questions, but sure. We got through a lot. Appreciate you being here. We'll have you back. Thank you, Bill. Thank you. And thank you for joining us. Join us again next week.